Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America, on Tuesday, March 12th, 2013. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by Tapas and Vino. Located in the heart of Riviera Village, Tapas and Vino offers an idyllic location to meet and eat, and has quickly become a favorite destination of local foodies. Opened in October 2011, this charming bistro offers an eclectic menu of small plates, salads, soups, and entrees for lunch and dinner daily. In addition, brunch is served every Saturday and Sunday with endless, yes, that's right, endless mimosas and bellinis. The popular outdoor patio boasts a vibrant scene each evening and features live music every Tuesday night. The extensive wine list offers varietals from regions around the globe, and brew enthusiasts will appreciate the comprehensive beer selection. Tapas and Vino also hosts monthly wine and or beer education events, provides off-premise catering, and has a private dining room for small groups. Tapas and Vino is currently running a Not Just Tapas and Vino campaign for listeners of the South Bay Show. Mention the South Bay Show or South Bay by Jackie and receive 25% off a lunch or Saturday and Sunday brunch entree. Be sure to visit the Tapas and Vino Facebook page for weekly specials and discounts. Tapas and Vino is located at 1729 South Catalina Avenue in Redondo Beach. For more information, visit the website at tapasyvino.com. That's TapasYvino, tapasyvino.com, or call 310-791-8200. That's 310-791-8200. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/ The South Bay Show, or visit our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with Solid Roots in the Community and a partnership with the Official Disaster Preparation Establishment. Our producer is the president of the local Manhattan Beach Community Emergency Response Team Association, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, listeners. I am fine, thank you. It's a beautiful day in Southern California.
Yes. Yes, it is. And, of course, with us today is owner, producer, writer of SouthBayByJackie.com, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm well this morning, Joe. Good morning, George.
Good morning.
Wow. There has always been, I guess, a sort of a thread of aviation in my family, too, but I just really did not know how extensive this was. Private aviation in our country has a long and varied history, and of course is critical to disaster preparation. Jackie, who is our guest today?
Our guest this morning is Rick Besaw. Rick was a member of the United States Air Force for 6 years and has been deployed all over the globe. He is a staff sergeant with the Civil Air Patrol and is currently an incident commander for the Florida wing of CAP. CAP stands for Civil Air Patrol. The Civil Air Patrol, the official auxiliary of the U.S. Air Force, is a nonprofit organization with more than 61,000 members nationwide, operating a fleet of 550 aircraft. CAP, in its Air Force auxiliary role, performs 90% of continental U.S. inland search and rescue missions as tasked by the Air Force Rescue Coordination Center. Its members also perform homeland security, disaster relief, and drug interdiction missions at the request of federal, state, and local agencies. Rick has been involved with the Civil Air Patrol since May of 2006 And in that role, he coordinates with the Air Force Rescue Coordination Center to locate and turn off emergency beacons that may be activated on aircraft or boats. Within his local squadron, he is the emergency services officer and is responsible for the training and implementation of training plans. Rick is currently working for a local government emergency management agency where he is a communicator dispatcher. He also volunteers for his city's CERT team, in which he assists with basic training and scenario development. Since joining the Civil Air Patrol, he has spent almost the entire time providing training to its members. Rick has written training plans in an effort to spin up an entire short-notice response force that can be operational within 2 hours. Welcome to the program, Rick. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Thank you, Jackie, and good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Rick.
Yes, sir.
It's a pleasure to have you, and a pleasure to celebrate the Civil Air Patrol. It's something that I think most people are just sort of tangentially aware of, but don't realize how extensive it is. 500 aircraft throughout the country. That's a significant airframe force, and it's great to have you.
Thank you.
So, Rick, I want to start off with explaining to people what the Civil Air Patrol is. Can you give us a brief history of the Civil Air Patrol and then a brief history of your involvement?
Okay. The Civil Air Patrol actually began or was incorporated December 1st, 1941, just before the Pearl Harbor bombing of World War II.
Wow.
Yep, and it excuse me. And it was like-minded aviation enthusiasts who couldn't get into the Army Air Corps at the time necessarily, but they still wanted to serve their country. So they got in their airplanes and helped doing that, running U-boat watches off the coast.
Mm-hmm.
Civil Air Patrol during that time has two squadrons that have confirmed sinks of German U-boats, one of them being Task Force 3, which is in Lantana, Florida, or was in Lantana, Florida at that time. Yep. Since then, we've transitioned to a search and rescue, more of a search and rescue, non-combat role, finding hikers and lost people, downed aircraft, items like that. And now more recently, we're going into a disaster response role with the new 406 GPS emergency beacons coming on.
Now, where are these emergency beacons deployed, or in what capacity are they deployed?
There's three types of them. The ELTs, which is an emergency location transmitter, is actually in the airplanes. It's set off by either a crash or a hard landing or a manual flipping a switch. There's EPIRBS, which is Emergency Position Indicating Radio Beacon, which is in maritime vessels, boats, lifeboats. And then you have a personal locator beacon, which is hikers and a lot of outdoors type carry those in case something happens. It can send a signal and they could have a response or rescue within a short time, right to their location.
Mm-hmm. Very, very key if you're a hiker or someone that does find themselves outdoors a lot, you may want to get one of those. Are those readily available at typical supply stores, or you have?
I have seen them at West Marine, and you order them off the internet. The big key when you do get one of those is to register it, because it gives emergency contact data to where if it's accidentally set off.
Mm-hmm.
The Air Force Rescue Coordination Center will just make a phone call, say, "Hey, are you okay?"
Mm-hmm.
And it can save resources by making a simple phone call rather than deploying an aircraft, a ground team, spinning up an incident commander.
Mm-hmm. Right, of course, right. So it should be registered. So this is fascinating. Now, tell me about your unit where you're stationed.
I'm actually in the Lantana Composite Squadron down in Palm Beach County, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
we currently have about 40 members, about half of which is cadets, which is age 12 to 18.
Mm-hmm.
And my job there is to train them up, get them spun up within the incident command system, as well as our specific qualifications like ground team member or UDF, or urban direction finding team member, so they can be useful and called up during missions.
Mm-hmm. I see. Wow, that's a nice. Do you guys get together as a team? I mean, all 50 strong regularly, or is that are you normally just kind of going in and out, and you only see like 10 or 15 at a time?
We average about 30 members, 30 to 35 members a meeting, and we meet every week.
Every week?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, then, so you see everyone quite often.
Yes.
What is the typical meeting like? I mean, do people go over incidents that have occurred in the past week?
What typically occurs, it varies from week to week, but it's the same setup in our unit. The first week we actually we have a safety briefing, and we do drill for the cadets because it's a paramilitary organization. They do learn how to march. The second week is our drug demand reduction program with our squadron commander, and it's emergency services, which is the search and rescue. The third week is physical training for the cadets, and then the fourth week is typically aerospace education, moral leadership, and then promotion boards and promotions.
I see. Good. Well, now, you know, there's lots of different things that we've talked about in terms of preparing for disasters, and whether it be earthquakes here in Southern California or floods in Atlanta and Georgia. And what do you prepare for most, and what are some of the challenges that you in the Civil Air Patrol find in Florida?
What we prepare for the most is actually floods and hurricanes, where the unit is located in Florida. And what the challenges we face is just finding people who want to go out. Once a lot of people are apprehensive about, oh, I'm going to be called up and I'm going to go find a beacon, or I'm going to go out and to do this, and it's going to be hard work. But a lot of people, once we can get them involved, find that it's actually a lot of fun, and there's a lot of reward to it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. The you're saying that just the reward of knowing that you've done something good, or maybe you've saved someone's life, actually.
Yep, we have several members within our area of responsibility that have saved lives doing the search and rescue.
Right, absolutely. So now, the Civil Air Patrol, they said, Jackie said at the top of the show, 500 airplanes strong. It's actually congressional. It was signed into law in 1946, Law 4676, that incorporated the Civil Air Patrol. But then in May of 1948, it was established as an auxiliary to the U.S. Air Force, which was actually new at that time. Do you guys actually get visits from your local congressman, or how does the support for the Civil Air Patrol work? And do the planes belong to the United States Air Force, or how does that work?
The planes are actually registered to the auxiliary of the United States Air Force if you pull up the FAA records on them.
Mm-hmm.
And we get our support through an Air Force appropriation every year.
I see.
And that's through our national headquarters, which is in, at Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is Civil Air Patrol is fascinating because it touches just every facet of some of the things that we've talked about, like, you know, when disasters occur, the official full-time disaster preparation establishment will be very, very busy involved in mitigating damage and saving lives at the sort of epicenter of disasters. But for, you know, a while, a week or so, most other people will just have to, you know, be as prepared as they can and be on their own because everyone else is busy. The Civil Air Patrol will be called into action during that time. What is the first thing that comes to your mind when you think of being, you know, called up during, let's say, the aftermath of a hurricane? What is the role, what is the mission for the Civil Air Patrol at that time?
Typically, it's going to be airborne photography, airborne videography to get an overall picture of how, of what areas are really affected. And there's several systems that we have in place that can actually do that, and one of them actually does belong to the Army National Guard.
I see. So reconnaissance and just sort of getting a sense of the extent of damage and location of damage, obviously incorporating potentially location of survivors and where they may need help to direct the resources of the professional responders, and then, of course, the National Guard would likely be called into play. We had talked a little bit about, or I read, I think, that and you had said that you're not a pilot, so you don't fly the planes, but you fly as a mission specialist.
Mission observer, yeah.
Mission observer. So how these planes are these typically Beechcraft, or what kind of planes are we talking about?
We're talking about Cessna 172s, Cessna 182s, Cessna 206, and a couple of Gypsum GA8 air vans.
Okay, so these are, well, maximum four-seaters, right?
206 can probably carry six, but we keep it at four, yeah.
Okay, cool. So maximum four-seater. These missions that you go on, this is fascinating. These missions that you go on, can they be 2-hour, 4-hour missions? How long do these typical missions last?
My shortest mission is actually 30 minutes.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
And they can go, my longest one has been 72 plus hours, with the exception of the ongoing mission that we have every year in Oshkosh for the Experimental Aircraft Association's air show that they put on there.
So, in Oshkosh, the Civil Air Patrol is like sort of the official race planes watching.
No, what we do is there are literally thousands of airplanes that fly into Oshkosh Airport every year, mm-hmm. and we go and track down the beacons that are going off, and then we also do ramp checks for people, for pilots who forget to close out their flight plans.
Okay. Right. Absolutely. Fascinating. George, I want to bring you into the conversation because I don't really know enough to know what kinds of questions to ask. I'd love for you to ask a couple of questions, and we'll get we'll twist the conversation in a different direction.
Oh, good. First time ever. 49 weeks. Now I get to talk. Thank you.
Yes.
No, I was just going to start by saying just before you, so no, actually you brought me in. You didn't interrupt.
Yeah.
Oshkosh, yeah. During this 2 weekends in a week, is one of the largest airports in the world, and that they will bring in aircraft, and I have flown into Oshkosh at this. They will be landing on two runways, two parallel runways, and a taxiway, upwards of six aircraft at the same time. They would have one airplane landing down the runway in the middle of it, one landing on the numbers, and they could all be touching down at the same time, three wide. It's a ballet in the sky. Nobody talks to anybody else. They rock their wings, and you listen intently to air traffic controllers that volunteer their time, that fight and to be able to go up there and say that they actually work the tower or air traffic at Oshkosh, and they this is done every year. It is the largest aviation get together in the world. So the plug for the EAA and a great time with a bunch of pilots. The Civil Air Patrol, I took part in a number of years ago, right after I first started to fly. And I know that in upstate New York, where I did it, it was mostly a search and rescue. Mm-hmm. We talked briefly about the new frequencies, the old VHF, which was the 121.5 locator beacon. Now the new 400 megahertz is different, and they're trying to push us all that way. But I don't know that it's going to end up there. But if you accidentally push your ELT or emergency locating transmitter, somebody's going to come find you. Mm-hmm. It's like squawking 7700 on a transponder in an aircraft, which denotes an emergency. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to go out. They're going to be looking for you. If you don't close a flight plan, as far as the FAA is concerned, something happened to you. If you land and you forget to make a phone call, somebody's going to come looking for you, and that's what they use the Civil Air Patrol for. Mm-hmm. And may I also say, too, that the Civil Air Patrol uses a bunch of their members, their own aircraft, their civilian aircraft. Mm-hmm. So the Civil Air Patrol has a number of their own aircraft that are registered and licensed to them, to the Air Force Auxiliary. But members also will utilize their own aircraft in an instance when it's needed and they need additional aircraft in the sky. And have I forgot anything, or
pretty much got it all.
Okay, it's an amazing organization, just like all of these other volunteer organizations that are out there that we all are going to rely on, and we all do rely on at times. Mm-hmm. because both are our first responders from our side of the corner when we talk about our police and fire, and in a disaster, they will be overwhelmed. It's not they may. We know that they will be. Mm-hmm. As well as our military will be spread thin, and we can use volunteers anywhere we can get them.
Right. I wasn't aware that they meet every week, so that's a situation where they do stay very operationally prepared. It's not like once a month or once a quarter or something like that. And then they are probably activated. Let me ask that question, Rick. Are you aware? Is your unit activated like every month? I mean, is there an event that you have to respond to every month, or is it every week?
It varies. It really does. Mm-hmm. We've gone a couple months where we've had no need to respond to anything, and then we've had several months where we're responding maybe twice to three times a week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's a matter of the weather and whether there's boaters or other sort of like pleasure craft in the area and issues occurring. What do you see? How old are you, Rick?
I am 28 years old.
Are you still active military, active Air Force?
No, I'm not.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, with Civil Air Patrol, my staff sergeant, that's what I was in the Air Force. It's the only way you can be an NCO senior member in Civil Air Patrol, mm-hmm. is by being an NCO in the military.
I see. Are you... Obviously, you're planning to continue with the Civil Air Patrol.
Yes, I am.
You're a lifer?
Right now, yes. Through the ups and downs, I'll probably always bleed blue.
Okay, that's great. I mean, obviously, like you said, there's a lot of fun involved. You're involved. You're constantly meeting new people. if not helping new people that you've never met before in a situation where they're very, you know, afraid, and they're thankful that someone is ready, willing, and able to come and help. What do you see as the future for the Civil Air Patrol? I mean, are there winds of change in the Civil Air Patrol, or is it a well-oiled machine?
I think it's a well-oiled machine that is in the wind of change.
Oh, really? Tell us about that.
We will always have our search and rescue role with the ELTs and the aviation community, but we're moving towards doing the disaster response, being able to get provide intelligence mm-hmm. to state and local officials so they can make disaster plans and they can get responders where they need to be rather than rely on reports from the that could be hours or days old.
Mm-hmm. Now, interestingly enough, you spark a question in my mind. Recently, there was a drone that was flying somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,500 feet that was reported by an aircraft, a pilot, and the FAA is currently investigating it. It was a report on our local news station out here in California. These drones are being sold on the open market. I think these models that we're talking about are in the $700 range that can fly that high and can fly for a considerable distance. Would that be something that you think might be incorporated in under the purview of the Civil Air Patrol, that is the flying of drones? They can have cameras on them, actually, and be used for surveillance.
That I can't say for sure. I know there is a lot of risk with flying drones, especially when you have an all-volunteer force.
Ah, yes, because they might drop out of the sky, you're saying? Yes, all right, that's fine. That makes sense. It isn't as regular and determined as an actual pilot in an actual plane. Yeah, that makes sense. Might be unsafe. This is a fascinating discussion because we have lots and lots of people, volunteers, of course, George and the Manhattan Beach Community Emergency Response Team Association, the CERT teams around the country, lots of volunteers involved in disaster preparation, but the Civil Air Patrol is a whole level above that, especially with the pilots. I just can't imagine anything more exciting than being regularly involved in using that skill. I know that pilots really love what they do, and they probably want to be of service. So that's a wonderful organization to be involved with. Wow.
We love to fly.
Right.
And even better at times in something like this, we love to fly when possibly somebody else will pay for the fuel.
Oh,
that's true. Yes.
Oh, there you go. Hey, George, I wanted to ask you something real quick. A couple of winters ago, there was some big important guy whose plane went down over Mammoth. I can't remember his name. Do you remember that?
Over Mammoth.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh. He was the guy that works with Richard Branson. I think he was one of his balloon racing.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name now.
Not Steve Fawcett.
Yes, Fawcett.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and it was in an aircraft, and it actually wasn't Mammoth. It was Mammoth.
It was Mammoth. Because
Mammoth?
Yeah. We were up there the weekend that a local hiker found some personal effects of his on the ground.
Okay.
It was off trail. You know, it was backcountry, but it was Mammoth. Yeah. So, did you get up in your plane and go look for him?
No. There was
a lot of people did.
None of that. No, they did up there. You know, this was something quite. You know, Steve was a experienced pilot. He could fly just about anything. He was in a plane similar to mine. And nobody really knows what happened. He was flying in the mountains. He was up there looking for some property, looking for a place to possibly build a facility to expand his aerospace endeavors,
mm-hmm.
and just never came back.
Mm-hmm.
Unbeknownst to all of us, we are all human and we do things we shouldn't do, including those that have been doing it for a long time and somewhat professionally, and we all know better.
Rick, that's the exact kind of situation, Rick, that the Civil Air Patrol gets called out for, right?
Yes, and actually we were involved with the Steve Fawcett search. Mm-hmm. You can do an image search for Civil Air Patrol and Steve Fawcett, and you'll see a ramp filled with nothing but CAP planes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yes, what a tragedy. He was lost on September of 2007, despite a month of searches by the Civil Air Patrol and others, Fawcett could not be found, and the search was called off in October of 2007. But then, of course, he was found September of 2008, a year later.
Yeah.
In the Sierra Nevadas near Mammoth. His DNA was matched to bones found near the crash site.
Yeah, well, the guy that found him was actually my boot fitter.
Mm. Mm.
He became a local celebrity real quickly.
Wow. That's
a boot fitter?
Ski boots. When I bought my last couple of pairs of ski boots.
That could be another show.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America. We have with us Rick Bisaw, a member of the Civil Air Patrol in Florida, and it's just a fascinating subject. We're having a great conversation about, volunteers, members of an auxiliary force to the United States Air Force, established December 1st, 1941, 6 days before Pearl Harbor, and then, of course, a tremendous asset during the war with, as Rick has said, confirmed kills of two U-boats. Amazing. Amazing history. Right now we'd like to thank a sponsor. Jackie, who do we want to thank today?
Well, you know, Joe, it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, the Palos Verdes Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong is dedicated to helping you navigate to financial success. Call 310-542-0011 for a free consultation, or you can visit the website at www.bcws.com.
Yes, BCWS. Com.
And don't forget, tax season is very soon.
You love saying that.
We've got just about a month to go.
Yes, yes. Wow. So, Rick, what else do you think most people who don't know about the Civil Air Patrol have sort of as a misconception? What do you think most people have as a misconception about the Civil Air Patrol?
That we are a flying club, which we are not.
Okay. And people think you guys get together, fly your planes from here to there, have a picnic, and fly back, and then you're done.
Yep.
What would you say the reality is more than that?
More of the reality is we go up from airport XYZ, during a mission, we'll do a search for whatever. We could be up there up to 4 hours, and then we'll return to XYZ, refuel the airplane, swap out for another crew, go back and continue the search until either the search is called off or we find what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Has technology significantly impacted how the Civil Air Patrol does searches now with GPS being widely used, or is this something that has been sort of incorporated into military / civil patrol operations for decades?
Technology has actually made it easier. with the GPS being on board, it's easier to relay coordinates to a ground team to actually go in and confirm an mm-hmm. aircraft mm-hmm. at a off-field location.
Mm-hmm.
And with the new beacons that are coming online, we've done fewer and fewer of the old-style searches. Now we're getting a set of coordinates where we can plot, and if the weather is less than desirable to fly an airplane, we can send a ground team out to a specific point to begin their electronic search.
Okay. So these new beacons, are they satellite-based, or how is it that we get specific latitude and longitude from these new beacons?
They use the GPS satellites, and the GPS satellites also have a 406 receiver on them. So when this beacon goes off, it transmits the GPS coordinates in a data burst, mm-hmm. and the GPS coordinates will get downloaded through a ground control station, and then sent over to Air Force Rescue Coordination Center,
mm-hmm.
and they'll say, we have three plots, here's the general area where they're going, and we can normally find a beacon within 100 yards of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rick, I got a quick question for you. With these personal locator beacons, would that include, like, avalanche transmitters?
Yes.
Okay, all right. My husband wears those when he skis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, they send the GPS coordinates as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is wonderful that this technology is available. It's relatively it's affordable, and there's just no reason that people need go out and, I guess, just risk life and limb without taking proper precautions. And one of the precautions is going into the backcountry. I mean, still today, as I understand it, people think of they think of Yosemite as a national icon, a tame place, but actually the backcountry in Yosemite is some of the most forbidding, and still today hikers get lost and some even die tracking too far into the backcountry, getting lost, not being able to get out, and no one knows where they are. And it's sad because this kind of technology is available that that could get them located if they get lost.
Hey, Rick, personal cell phones, do they have locator beacons in them now?
Not per se. You have to – there's apps that you can download to where people can track you online, mm-hmm. but typically, no, they don't have an actual transmitter beacon that'll mm-hmm. transmit and activate the search and rescue system.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Also, the only other issue with this cell phones is, of course, they're not designed to survive long enough. These beacons will continue to transmit for days, whereas your typical cell phone will run out of juice in just, you know,
True.
You know, 24 or 48 hours, and then it's done.
Yep.
You can't leave it on that long. But
what, if I may, in the cell side of it,
mm-hmm.
You know, the cell side does have both the smartphones do have GPS capability, and or the older phones without GPSs, if something happens within a triangulation of a number of cell sites, it can be utilized by individuals. I mean, I can find my grandson or my granddaughter, with the applications through Verizon.
Right.
But cell phones are set up where you can either have it GPS capable all of the time or only on a 911 call.
Mm-hmm.
So if you call 911, it will pop up, and the phone company could then give a coordinates to rescuers to be able to come and locate somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, those coordinates will show up right on the caller information screen when you call 911.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And depending on how the answering center has their system set up, will actually bring up a map of that location.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. There's no excuse to get lost anymore.
Well, I know my smartphone needs a data connection in order to download the maps for the area I'm in, so
yeah.
Backwoods of Yosemite, I don't think there's many cell sites.
No.
And you know something, you'd be surprised. I mean, in Mammoth, every week in the paper, somebody goes missing in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Every week.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's rampant all around us, and people need to take care that they don't. The simple things. Don't get lost. And if you get lost, be prepared to get found.
There you go.
No basic survival skills.
Yeah. Yeah. Rick, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Go on.
I was going to just, you know, make sure that you have, you know, we can all live without food for a number of days or a week.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot live without water.
Mm-hmm.
So all of you hikers out there, make sure that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Run off with a good deal of water that will allow you to stay hydrated.
Yep. Air Force Survival School teaches rule of three when it comes to that. 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, and 3 weeks without food.
Right.
Three weeks without food.
I know, I couldn't do that.
3 weeks, yay.
You'd be alive, you'd live.
I don't know.
Talk about a crash diet.
Yeah, right.
Fascinating stuff, Rick. It really is. We're so thankful that you could join us today to talk about what you do with the Civil Air Patrol. So, Rick, what do you do other than the Civil Air Patrol?
I'm actually a dispatcher communicator for Palm Beach County Emergency Management. I sit in a room, I answer phones, I dispatch response personnel, not necessarily 911, but we handle almost every county agency with the exception of three.
Wow. Well, you are a professional in every sense of the word.
Thank you, sir.
Where exactly are you located? Did you say Palm Beach?
Palm Beach County, yes.
Oh, okay. So Palm Beach County, that's right on the East Coast.
Yep.
Didn't we talk to someone else from Palm Beach County?
Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale, that's right.
That's a little further south.
Yeah.
Yep. A little bit further.
Oh, I see. Yes. Okay. Yes.
He probably knows him.
He might.
Who was that, George?
Oh, now you're going to ask me.
Yeah, right.
Give me a second.
Rick, let me ask you. I'm looking at Palm Beach County.
Freddie. I'm sorry. Yeah, it was, yeah.
I'm sorry?
It was Freddie.
Yes.
One of my first ones.
Zavallo?
You had Freddie Zelaya.
Zelaya.
And, who's emergency disaster coordinator for Fort Lauderdale.
Right. I've always wanted to ask this. Maybe you'll know, Rick. I'm looking at Lake Okeechobee.
Okay.
And is that a shallow lake or is it a deep lake?
Right now it's about 15 feet deep at its deepest point.
15 feet deep. It's huge.
Yep.
I mean, it's huge. It's a city. I mean, or whatever. It's huge.
It's and an ocean.
It's an ocean. But it's only 15 feet deep at its deepest.
Yep.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Very, very popular for boating.
Right.
Yes, it is.
Right. Wow.
I've been on Lake Okeechobee.
Okeechobee.
And there's a few other events like bike around the lake, and there's a few other events where they go around the lake.
It's been fascinating, Rick. I think more people in the United States should be aware of the Civil Air Patrol and probably would benefit from either, if not joining their local regional chapter, at least visiting and attending some kind of an open house or something like that to find out more about what their local chapter of the Civil Air Patrol does, and we certainly encourage that.
Yep. They can always go online to www.gocivilairpatrol.com, and I think it's towards the top, there's a unit locator. They'll say find a unit or something along that lines.
Right.
And they can plug in their zip code, and it'll give them a list of their closest units.
Right. Wow. We are fascinated by it. It's something that's there for us. More resources to help everyone. Everyday heroes, every day, they say there. And that's what we're looking for, everyday heroes. Thank you so much, Rick, and stay with us, please. We're going to just cover some notes for the show. And George? Do you have some notes for us for future shows? Or?
Yeah, I'm here. I've got some information here. For those of you that have not spent any time with our co-host, Jackie, tomorrow evening, her women's self-defense class will continue. It's designed for women by women. It is free Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m., it's at the Fitness Evolution at 200 North Harbor Drive in Redondo Beach at 7 p.m. It's on the second floor in the Triton Room. You bring your daughters, mothers, sisters, nieces. All of you women get together and know how to protect yourselves. And rumor has it, it is growing and more people are coming every week. Right, Jackie?
Right, yeah. As a matter of fact, this week we're going to work on chokes. How to get out of chokes.
Okay. You know, guys, she talks about this. I should not even say that because, you know, that just makes me cringe.
Yeah.
All right. Also, our Manhattan Beach Community Emergency Response Team will continue its CPR and AED training over the next few months. Saturday, March 30th, in the morning only, this particular day from 8 to noon, we still have room for 6 or 7 participants in our AM class from 8 a.m. to 12 noon on March 30th. It's the day before Easter. It will be in our police and fire community room at 420 15th Street in Manhattan Beach off of our plaza. If you're interested, you may send an email to training@mbcerta.org. It is $45, which will cover the cost of your certificates and a small donation to our CERT organization. Also on April 27th and Saturday, June 22nd, we will have two classes. We will have the AM class from 8 a.m. to 12 noon. And we will have a PM class from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. These are limited to 20 participants in each class. And you can also go online to our website, mbcerta.org. And in the left column, There's a place you can click on, CPR AED, Red Cross Training, and pick your class and sign up that way also. On top of that, I want to announce that the city of Hawthorne is training L.A. County Fire, and the city is having a CERT class, and it is going to be on Saturday, March 16th, March 23rd, and April 6th, from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. There's not going to be any class on the 30th, the day before Easter. All three sessions, you need to complete all three sessions to receive a certificate. It's going to be at the City of Hawthorne Memorial Center at 3901 West El Segundo Boulevard in Hawthorne. Claudio Taniguchi is the Emergency Preparedness Coordinator, and Hawthorne and Inglewood and Gardena are all part of the Tri-Cities CERT organization. And if anybody is interested in taking part in this, this is a free sign-up. You can go take this class for free and then determine what supplies you might need. In our case in Manhattan Beach, we get a commitment of $60 for our classes, and then we provide you with about $75 worth of materials. Mm-hmm. But anybody interested in taking the CERT class and training through L.A. County Fire and the city, please call Officer Taniguchi at 310-349-1687. And you can sign up. It fills up, but a lot of people don't show, so you can get put on a waiting list. I'm not sure just what the status is of it right now. But that's what's going on. If anybody out there has something to talk about when it comes to disasters, I'm still working on a couple of people for this next Tuesday show, and I'm always willing to listen and learn. So if you're out there and you have something you'd like to say to our listeners, give me a shout. Shout out to G Butts, G-B-U-T-T-S, at mbcerta.org. And that's what's going on this week, the week of 3/11/2013 already. Thank you very much.
All right. Good. Yeah, we are doing very well. I'm very glad and pleased with what's going on with the show now. We're just rolling along. Rick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
We covered a lot of topics. Is there something that you think we didn't cover that you'd like to get out there for people to know about the Civil Air Patrol?
We work very closely with a lot of the government agencies. If they are interested in having us perform anything for them, they can call our National Operations Center, or they can get a hold of their local chapter or local unit to help them through the process.
Yeah, there's I guess there's several things that that we don't normally think about. I mean, do you do surveys for farmers and when I'm thinking in sort of drought conditions and those kinds of things, I understand that there are devices that could be carried in airplanes that can measure the groundwater, not groundwater, surface water, actually soil moisture in ground, and could help farmers make plans about irrigation and stuff like that. Do you guys ever do those kinds of missions?
No, because it's typically going for being hired by a private company.
I see.
By our charter with the Air Force, we can't do that.
I see.
But we can do fire spotting or hotspot spotting and report the locations of fire hotspots to like the fire department and other government agencies.
Sure.
I would imagine that in Florida, you guys keep pretty busy with all that coastline and people getting lost in the Everglades and all those crazy boaters out there?
Mm-hmm. Well, one, a lot of people do not get lost in the Everglades.
No.
As far as the crazy boaters, anything that is offshore in the Atlantic Ocean, in the Straits of Florida, or out in the Gulf of Mexico is actually handled by the Coast Guard.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
We handle anything within the land borders of the lower 48.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I see. So it has to be something on land, whether it's a person lost or a downed plane or something like that, but it would be within the borders of the land.
Yes, sir.
Oh, so okay. So if pleasure boaters are just off coast and they go missing, you don't go out looking for them. That's Coast Guard. Okay,
that's Coast Guard.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. But like on the intercoastal?
We've had a few beacons go off on the intercoastal. One of them was actually submerged, and that took us about 3 days to find because of it was actually floating with the current back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. It wasn't a stationary beacon.
Mm-hmm. What did that turn out to be?
Somebody had just put a beacon in the water, threw it overboard, or it fell in the water, and mm-hmm. It activated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Wow.
Wild goose chase, that.
Yeah.
Yes, very much so.
Wow. Well, that's a good waste of a beacon.
And a lot of people's time and efforts.
Yeah, absolutely.
And fuel.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wonderful. You've been a great guest, Rick. We really appreciate your time and your service, both your service to your country and also now in your new capacity, you're a part of the solution. When we need you, you're professionally dispatching emergency response and then further volunteering your services to the Civil Air Patrol. So we want to thank you for that, and that's what we do. We meet lots and lots of people who have decided to serve their fellow citizens. So thank you for that, Rick.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. George, any final thoughts?
Our country depends on volunteers.
Hmm.
Often in seminars that I've been in the 2.5 days I spent this last weekend teaching a class of 21 of them to learn how to take care of themselves, we often don't recognize our volunteers enough, and we certainly should. The Civil Air Patrol and the efforts that they do, because all but a few of them are volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
They take their time as well as all of those that in Neighborhood Watch and or CERT and other organizations that help us to work with our paid responders and our government. If you know a volunteer and you see them around, thank them.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, Rick, I certainly thank you for being on the show and for also being out there to support the men and women and the people of Florida.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very
much. Getting mushy or something here.
That's our show, ladies and gentlemen. We thank you for joining us. Reach out thank your local Civil Air Patrol where you are in the country. They are serving you. Unbeknownst to you, without your knowledge, the Civil Air Patrol is there and will be there for the duration. Thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
All right. That's our show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us today. We'll see you again next Tuesday. And tomorrow and all around. Bye-bye now.